Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Will Israel respond to Iran's first ever direct attack? The Israeli government is under pressure not to retaliate, but says it's weighing its options. What could they be? And what would a direct confrontation between the regional rivals mean for an already volatile Middle East? I'm James Bayes, and you're listening to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyse, and help define major global stories. Let's discuss all of this with our panel of guests today. Joining us from Dayton, Ohio, in the US today, Randa Slim is a senior fellow and director of conflict resolution at the Middle East Institute. In Durham, in northern England, Robert Geist Pinfold is a lecturer in peace and security at Durham University. And in Tel Aviv, Israel, Akiva Elder is a political analyst and author of the book Lords of the Land, which is about Israel's settlements in the occupied territories. Thank you, all of you, for talking to us. We heard in our report the UN Secretary General talking about the situation at the Security Council. He says the Middle East is on the brink. Randa, in a different scenario, if there had been deaths or many casualties, we may have already gone over the brink. Would you not agree?
Yes, of course. I think we might have gotten over the brink. And that's why I think Iran might have, or Iran staged this attack in a way to avoid civilian death, to avoid fatalities. We are definitely in a new era in the region in terms of the conflict between Iran and Israel. We have moved from a shadow war where the rules of the game were somehow understood between them. Now we are in a new era where we have a direct military confrontation between them from Iranian territory to Israel. And there are new rules that are being negotiated basically militarily or indirectly between them through these confrontation. And so definitely we are, yeah, the region is going to be on the brink of a wide regional war from now on. Every time there is a confrontation between them, there is a threat of the region devolving into a wide regional war.
Akiva, we know Prime Minister Netanyahu's views on Iran. I've attended for more than the last 10 years the UN General Assembly every year in New York, the high-level session. And some years, he's not mentioned the Palestinians. He's done his whole speech about Iran. Are you surprised that so far he's shown some restraint?
I'm not surprised because it's not just Netanyahu now. There is a war cabinet where you can see members of the Central Party, Gantz and Eisenkot, that they are watching him very carefully. It's like they are babysitting him. And the other thing is Netanyahu knows that it's not still not Donald Trump at the White House. We have a president that doesn't trust Netanyahu, and he knew that this Iranian attack wouldn't have ended the way it did. So Netanyahu, first of all, has to listen to the chief of the Israeli NSC. He has to listen to the chief of staff, the army. And the big boss now, I think that the real prime minister of Israel in these days, maybe since October 7th, is Joe Biden, not Netanyahu. The Israeli public doesn't trust him. Even many members of his own party are not sure that he is not motivated by his interest to remove from the agenda his personal problem, his trial. And this, actually, I read today that President Trump is using the conflict between Israel and Iran in order to move the American agenda from his trial, from his own problems. So there are some similarities between Netanyahu and Trump. And maybe Trump, Netanyahu is waiting, hoping that in November there will be someone else at the White House that he can convince to attack Iran, like he tried several times, as you mentioned, James. And perhaps he believes that Trump will, what he did before, will put more sanctions on Iran and maybe will...
Robert, none of us are able to right now know exactly what's going on in Israel because none of us are in those war cabinet meetings. But explain to me what you think the current Israeli position is as we speak now.
Well, you know, whenever we talk about Israeli politics, we like to kind of create this simple divide between hawks and doves, you know, those who want a more extreme response to any kind of event like this. Though the responses that we're hearing so far, and this is all very much hearsay and leaks, it shows you just how, you know, we can't rely too much on this characterization. We had people like Gadi Eisenkot, we had people like Benny Gantz, who are supposed doves in Israel's current coalition, actually arguing that Israel should immediately respond to Iran whilst that Iranian attack was taking place. From what we're hearing, it was actually Benjamin Netanyahu who was far more restrained and suggested that, you know, we should, Israel should basically wait to see what the after effects are, how the Iranian attack would end. And the reason that Israel hasn't come responded yet, this comes back to the first question that you asked. The reason Israel hasn't responded yet is because there were, as you mentioned, no deaths, no significant damage done. And that is also why that international coalition was involved in shooting down those drones and shooting down those other projectiles. We know that at least one third of those projectiles were not shot down by Israel. They were shot down by a combined effort of the Jordanians, the Americans, and the United Kingdom. And people have been asking the legitimate question of why this intervention, why have these powers intervened in this conflict now when they've been happy to let Israel's campaign roll on in Gaza? And the answer is this desire to avoid casualties. Had those one third of projectiles not been intercepted, I think it's fair to say you would be seeing concrete damage in Israel. You would be seeing casualties, possibly, particularly at the Netivim military base, which seems to have been the target of these attacks. So in that intervention, that international coalition has basically pulled the rug out from those extremists in Israel who, no matter what the consequences, would be arguing for Israel to respond decisively, perhaps by actually attacking Iranian soil.
Randa, we are looking at a few public comments from senior Israeli officials and also lots and lots of Israeli sources, you know, who've been whispering things to journalists. One from the Israeli TV channel, Channel 12, saying that eventually there is going to be a significant response. Before we continue the discussion, maybe you should lay out for us what that actually would mean for the region.
I mean, the significant response does not have to be an open military confrontation between the two countries. After all, there have been instances in the past where covert action took place, you know, assassination of officials, scientists in Iran, of people associated with the Axis of Resistance, you know, the Iran-led Axis of Resistance, like Jihad Mughniyeh in Damascus, where the Israelis had a role in that. And so there have been these responses, but there has been this, how to say, shadow war between them, where different tools that are not openly available, initially openly known, were used. And I think this could come in this form in the future. It's the kind of response that, you know, people on both sides of the aisle will know that a retaliation has taken place and we might not know about it for a while. That could be one form of response. And I think yesterday, the readout from the meeting of senior American officials with the press was that still, the United States is saying that Israel has a right to defend itself. And so they have not closed the door on some kind of a response by Israel. But as the reports have said, the Secretary of Defense basically informed his Israeli counterpart, let us know ahead of time, unlike what happened, for example, with the Israeli strike on Damascus, in Damascus on the Iranian consulate, where the Americans were informed of the attack as the planes were heading, or as the attack started. And so at least now the Americans are saying, okay, you want to retaliate, think about it first. Think about the cost of this retaliation. And also, what kind of retaliation? President Biden has made it clear that he's not going to support what he called an offensive reaction against Iran by Israel. And so what kind of retaliation will be considered defensive, and what kind of retaliation will be considered by the American as offensive?
Okay. I'd like to talk about the possible military options there are for Israel in a moment. But Robert, you heard Randa there talk about the shadow war that had been going on. Did Israel break the sort of unwritten rules of that shadow war that had it developed its own parameters by that attack on the consulate in Damascus?
I don't think so. I mean, this was obviously an escalation. What happened there was not a usual occurrence in the shadow war. But you have to remember that Israel has done things like this previously, including attacks on sovereign Israeli territory. We've had individuals involved in the Iranian nuclear program assassinated within Iran's borders. And Iran didn't respond to those assassinations in the way it responded to this attack on the consulate, which took place, as you said, in Damascus, not actually in Iran, in Syria on the 1st of April. So Iran is basically trying to change the rules of the game. Iran is trying to rein in Israel and say, look, if you carry out these kind of attacks, they will not be met by a response in the shadow war, perhaps through one of our proxies. They will be met by a direct attack on Israeli territory. And that's exactly why there's still this support or appetite in Israel from some sections of Israeli society for a decisive response, even though there were no casualties, to basically say we cannot let Iran change the rules of the game. They have to pay a high price for doing what they've done, regardless of how the attack actually panned out.
Akiva, you are there in Tel Aviv. Let me ask you about the appetite among the public for further retaliation. What has the Iranian attacks done to public opinion? Has it unified the country behind Netanyahu?
Well, it takes me back to 91, to the first Gulf War, where the Israeli people were divided as well as the cabinet. And Mr. Shamir has accepted the American request to use restraint and not to retaliate after Tel Aviv was attacked by Scud missiles from Iraq. And I think until today, it depends whom you ask. If you ask a voter of the Likud or Ben-Gvir, he will tell you that restraint is weakness, that in the Middle East, in this part of the world, you cannot afford not to retaliate, and you can even turn a blind eye or a blind ear to the request of the President of the United States. Well, Shamir listened to President Bush Sr., and he swallowed the humiliation. And now it brings us to your question, James. There are Israelis who are very grateful to the president, President Biden, and they believe that Netanyahu should keep listening to him. For them, this attack on Saturday, and, you know, people were stocking up waters, batteries, now they're stuck with a lot of them. I went Sunday to the museum, and I was told that me and my wife were the first and only visitors in the museum. So people have a feeling of relief and grateful, and they also know how important it is, the alliance with the Arab neighbors. Netanyahu is, of course, riding on this success, because the headlines in the Israeli papers is that Israel's technology, Israeli high-tech, has proven its significant success. And actually, even this is a great day for the Israeli military industry, that now there is more demand of the facilities of interception drones. It is proven that it's very efficient. But I believe that the mainstream Israelis were very concerned about the attack. People were sitting near the radio and television until 2 o'clock. And the Iranians were very generous because they gave us the timeline of the attack. And in the morning, well, people went to work with red eyes because it was a very short night for them. And I don't think that there is great appetite to go back to the shelters and to experience such a kind of a drone. It was, I can tell you, it was very, very frightening, James.
Okay, well, let's bring in Randa there. What options do you think Israel has if it's going to respond in some way, but not with a full-on military attack? I mean, is there some sort of symbolic attack it could do, a cyber attack, an attack on somewhere that's not Israeli Iranian soil, attack one of its proxies, for example?
I think the Israeli response will be some kind of I don't know what, but one option would be, you know, a cyber attack on the systems that have been used in the attack on Israel, or some kind of an attack on the base from where missiles, drones were launched, whether it's a targeted attack or whether it's a cyber attack. So I think this is a kind of symbolism that Iran will understand. So they said, we attacked, they were direct hit on the base from where the weapons that were used in the attack on Damascus were launched. And then so a reply from Israel in targeting the places from where the weapons used in the Iranian attack on Israel were launched, or the system themselves, would be that kind of symbolism that basically Iran will understand a tit for tat, which this is a kind of, how to say, rule that has so far governed their shadow war. But again, we are in a different era. For the first time, you have direct attack from Iranian soils on Israeli soil. Understand the covert attacks that targeted Iranian scientists on Iranian territory. I understand that. I get that. But this is a different kind of attack, and we are now this confrontation between the two, the contestation between the two, is now governed by new rules. And so we are entering this interregnum period where each one of them is going to try to set these new rules, or how to say, you know, and until these new rules between them that governs these contestations are basically negotiated via different means, diplomatic, military, whatever, and understood by everybody and governing the next phase of the contestation, we are entering a very period of unstable stalemate, where any kind of attack between the two, shadow or direct, can devolve into a regional war. And that's where the region is coming in. The region right now is feeling, regional leaders, people in the region are feeling that we are under a new kind of situation, a different phase of the conflict, that's why you are hearing all of the foreign ministers, all the leaders pushing for de-escalation,
you're right. There are so many people calling for restraint, among them President Biden. But Robert, there are also voices coming from the US that are saying, no, don't show restraint. This is the time to finish the job. Take out Iran's nuclear facilities. Just listen to John Bolton. He used to be President Trump's national security advisor, speaking on a US cable TV station.
A way to pin that down is for Israel to go after Iran's nuclear weapons program, which I think it can destroy or disable in very substantial part. If Israel is prepared to go after Iran's nuclear program, the United States should proudly join them.
What do you make of that, Robert?
Well, what I make of it is people who have been saying the same thing for years using any sort of current events to say the same thing they've been saying for years. John Bolton on any day would tell you that Israel should strike Iran's nuclear program. And now he just sees an opportunity to basically legitimize his cause. And you're seeing that in Israel as well. You're seeing people, as we've mentioned, like Itamar Ben-Gvir, Minister of Public Security, Bezalel Smotrich, Minister of Finance, saying that, you know, we have to throw the gloves off, to hell with proportionality. We basically have to go crazy, in the words of Ben-Gvir. But again, these pyromaniacs have been saying the same thing for years. They're just trying to cash in on this latest opportunity. Now, there's very little evidence that Israel could actually do the damage to Iran's nuclear program with a kinetic attack that people like John Bolton are arguing. We've talked about cyber attacks. There was the Stuxnet virus, which was allegedly created by the Israelis and Americans, which set the Iranian nuclear program at least as far back as a kinetic strike would have done. Iran's nuclear program is not like the Iraqi nuclear program or the Syrian nuclear program, which Israel disabled with one precision strike. It is deep underground. It is dispersed throughout the country. These targets are very hardened. They are well protected. And so one Israeli strike couldn't do the job. Israel might be able to take the Iranian nuclear program back a few years, but then that would be another game changer. That would basically set the bar higher for an Iranian retaliation against Israel. So Israeli leaders have to ask themselves, is the price really worth it? Would they be able to get enough out of it by setting the Iranian nuclear program back by a few years? I would argue that they wouldn't.
Akiva, of course, while all of this is going on in the last few days, the war in Gaza continues. No one died in Israel from this attack, but over 100 Gazans were killed in this period by Israel. What does this mean, do you think, for the war on Gaza?
Actually, Israel is looking at three frontiers now, and plus Iran. It's Gaza, Lebanon, and the West Bank. What the settlers have been doing there in the last few days, taking advantage of the confrontation in other frontiers. So Israel has to deal, and the United States is looking very deeply into those frontiers. And paradoxically, the proxies, mainly the Hezbollah, is causing much more damage to Israel, not only militarily, diplomatically, economically, in the last 6 months, than Iran did. Actually, what happened Saturday proves that the Iranians, the Ayatollahs, are not loose cannons. They could do much more damage, and they probably took into consideration the Israeli, the possibility that Israel will retaliate. And I fully agree with Robert that an attack on the nuclear facilities in Iran is completely crazy. I don't think that Netanyahu, this was part of his vision, but he knows that President Biden will never support it. Even the American Congress is not eager to go into a regional war.
Okay, let me bring in Randa just one more time on Gaza. What do you think this means for the conflict in Gaza? Does it in some ways help Israel that international attention is now moved? Okay, it's the same country involved, but moved to a different issue.
I don't think so. I think the damage that Israel has done to its reputation over the last 6 months through the way it conducted the war in Gaza is somehow, you know, it's permanent. And as long as the war in Gaza continues, and there is now fear that there is some kind of a trade that has been negotiated, there is a fear out in the United States, especially among the communities that are Arab American, that in return for Netanyahu showing restraint by not retaliating, Biden is going to basically say, give his okay to a Rafah operation, which will be a disaster. So no, I don't think that. I think what needs to happen in Gaza is what the Americans and the Biden administration have been pushing. They need a ceasefire and they need the return of hostages, and hopefully that will lay the ground for a permanent ceasefire. So this is not going to change by what happened on Sunday.
Thank you very much, Randa. Thank you to all our guests today, Randa Slim, Robert Geist-Pinfold, and Akiva Elder. This episode was produced by Mohamed El Aishi, Fintan Monaghan, Veronica Pedroza, and Jim Gilchrist. Studio sound was by Renjith Kurian. The programme was edited by Manish Matai, Zainab Adda, and Joe De Frias. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every one of our episodes. Thanks for listening. Join me on Tuesday for our next edition.
Coming up on The Take, Iran attacks Israel for the first time. What happened? That's The Take from Al Jazeera. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.